Welcome to the Exit Coach Radio Show, the show for baby boomer business owners who are looking for cutting-edge information as they plan their 3 to 10 year business succession and exit. Every week, we interview top professional advisors for their best tips, strategies, and precautions so you can be well-planned. And don't miss our one-minute Exit Coach tip of the day on ExitCoachRadio.com. And now, here's your host, the Exit Coach, Bill Black.
Welcome back, everyone. Thanks for listening. Just a reminder that we have interviewed nearly 300 advisors in the last 10 months, and you can find all of their content on ExitCoachRadio.com. There's a topic, and you can search by name or by topic in our archives on the right-hand side. So if you're looking for some cutting-edge information from a variety of advisors on a variety of topics, go to ExitCoachRadio.com. My next guest is Ganesh Kaliyat. Oh, I had it a few minutes ago.
You were so close. You practiced it 3 times and you fumbled it right at
Ganesh Kalyanaraman.
Yes.
And from the Chugg firm, right? And Ganesh is an attorney, and the firm specializes in immigration law. And it's a firm that is right on the cutting edge of what's happening with immigration trends. And we've talked before, and there's some fascinating things that you don't think about because of all the number of different laws in various parts of the world, and what you have to know when you're either hiring someone from that area or when one of your employees is going over there maybe to open up a branch office or an office, or you want to staff up over there. So Ganesh, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much.
It's a pleasure to have you on. Tell us a little bit about your background and your firm's background.
Sure. So I grew up in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Went to Chicago for undergrad, law school. Started working there at a boutique immigration law firm. Got my feet wet there, and then joined my present firm up in the Bay Area office. Was there for about a year and a half, and then transitioned down here to the Cerritos office due to my wife getting a job in Long Beach.
Mm-hmm. And so from Pittsburgh to California.
Right, from Pittsburgh to California.
Ultimately. Yeah. Where do you like better?
I'm liking California a lot better. The weather is very, very easy to get used to.
Yeah, once it gets a little colder, it probably has its more appeal.
Indeed.
It's crowded out here, but, you know, that's why it's crowded.
That's
because people love it out here.
Absolutely.
So tell us about the Chugg firm, and what do you all do?
Yeah, so I work in the immigration department of the Chugg firm. We're a law and CPA firm, actually. So I just work in the immigration department. We're a full-service law firm and a full-service CPA firm. Typically, we target small to medium-sized businesses that are starting up here in the U.S. or larger international businesses that want to establish a presence in the U.S. Mm-hmm. So, you know, talking to your audience of Exit Coach Radio, you know, we really think ourselves as from the entry into a business to the exit. And we really are able to offer a one-stop shop for all services that are needed between the beginning and the end of a business.
So full service, meaning anything anybody needs, basically you have someone either there or of counsel that you can pull in for the...
Right, exactly. We have a litigation department, a corporate department, employment, tax, M&A. So we have different departments, and we have 5 offices throughout the country.
Well, what a tremendous resource for a small, medium business owner that says, you know, I don't want to tell my story over and over and over again. I want to work with a firm I can trust, and just, as one person put it, one throat to choke.
Right.
if something's going wrong and I need to talk to someone at either tax or legal issues, someone that understands a firm, that's the Chugg firm. So it sounds like that's a fantastic firm. So what differentiates your firm besides that from other law firms and you from other immigration attorneys?
Yeah. So, you know, our firm's mission really is to work in a team collaborative environment. And we really see ourselves as a partner, not just a vendor for our client. We frequently try to put ourselves in our client's shoes and have a commitment to getting back to our client within 24 hours. Now, that's not maybe an answer within 24 hours, but at least an acknowledgement of, okay, you know, we've received your request, you know, we have your questions, we're researching them, and we really want to always have a presence with our client and feel as though, you know, they're not lost and, you know, there's somebody there for them.
That's refreshing because I know it's so busy in small business and medium business that sometimes you forget you have so many things going on, and then you realize, hey, nothing's happened on this for a couple of weeks or maybe even a couple of months. And, right. And so having somebody who communicates back is very refreshing.
Right. Yeah. We always like to have an open line of communication with our clients so that they don't feel stressed out to any degree as to any of these processes, because immigration specifically, it's already a very stressful process.
Oh, yeah, I can imagine. Now, what differentiates you in the immigration world?
Yeah, so for me, I really do specialize more in the corporate environment, the employment-based, the investor-based in immigration. I also do, you know, the deportation work for our friends and family of the firm or for our C-suite professionals. But I really focus on the employment-based side of things and the investor-based side. So in the employment-based side, you know, we, like I said, we represent the gamut of companies, small, medium-sized companies that find an individual who is talented, who just doesn't happen to be a U.S. citizen or a green card holder. They've gone to school here, perhaps in an area that would serve the business, and they want to hire them. So we support them in getting the proper paperwork together, the proper visa together to do that. And for the investor-based side, it is for those companies that, you know, have a presence abroad that now want to come here in the U.S. and invest and, you know, get some immigration benefit from that.
So is immigration an area that people approach the firm for a lot, or is it usually they're a client of the firm first for other reasons, and then they realize they need to expand beyond their current needs?
Good question. So I'd say my number one resource is my current clients, you know, making referrals out to people that are in their industry, their friends, their competitors, their partners that require some immigration support. Besides that, yeah, it would be some type of cross-selling within our firm of someone who just happens to require a immigration consultation, and they're currently a CPA client of ours, or they're currently, you know, a corporate client of ours.
How soon in advance should a company contact you or your firm if they're thinking about hiring an employee from overseas, for instance, or how soon in advance should they start their planning for that?
Yeah, excellent question. So the immigration system, there's various visa options for work, but the one main one is the H-1B visa. And there's only 65,000 of those visas available every year. So they're first come, first serve. And the demand for those visas is vastly more than the supply. So of those 65,000, about 225,000 apply for that.
Wow.
So the remaining of those people, they are put into a lottery. And if they win, then they get one of these 65,000 visas, or they get the ability for the Immigration Service to adjudicate them.
Does that run on a calendar year?
That runs on the fiscal year of the government.
Okay,
which is October 1st. Mm-hmm. We can begin filing April 1st. So if you contact me, you know, January, February of each beginning year, then that would probably be the appropriate time so that we can put together a properly filed petition in April.
So it opens up. How quickly do you think it fills up those 65,000 slots?
So it fills up the first day.
Oh my gosh.
Yes.
Really?
Right. So, but in 2007, what happened was, you know, obviously it filled up the first day and they said, well, that's ridiculous. So starting the following year in 2008, they say, as long as you file within, you know, 5 business days of April 1st, then we'll count it as properly filed on the first day.
So somewhere out there is a government administrator that dreads April 1st.
and FedEx too. FedEx. Pizza.
Okay, so what's broken about the immigration system? What's your take?
Yeah, I think that's one of the biggest things.
Yeah, it seems like it.
You know, as the economy either goes up or down, this 65,000 number remains the same.
How long has it been like that?
It's been like that since about 2002. So what happened in 2000 and 2001, you know, it was almost double that 65,000. But, you know, they in anticipation of Y2K. And once that 120,000 didn't get hit, Congress decided to say, okay, you know, if it didn't get hit, like, are these really necessary? Let's just cut it down to 65,000.
Why would they cut it down if what's the reason behind that?
Right. So it's, you know, immigration, it's really a political chip.
Okay.
You know, as it's always in the news. So this was just something that, you know, they did as part of a rider to a bill to reduce the number.
But it seems like economically you're bringing in jobs, you're bringing in, you're bringing in new consumers actually that to work.
And right.
So
I'm not even sure why there is a cap, because if there's a job, then there's a job.
If there's a job. Yeah, that's the key. If there's a job.
Yeah.
So we're are there any changes afoot to, I mean, what's happening?
Right. So there's definitely, you know, as it's in the news, there's definitely changes both on the family based side with Obama, you know, perhaps using his executive powers to change some of the things there. And on the employment based side, there isn't as much of a push to change those numbers. There is some, you know, interest groups and a lot of companies like Microsoft, IBM, Facebook that are going and saying, why is there even a cap? Or if you have to have a cap, at least increase it so it's not so ridiculous that if we find a qualified applicant and we want to file for him, it's not some type of lottery random system in which, you know, that's what's dependent on them getting the job.
I'm kind of got to pick myself up off the floor here. I can't understand why we would want to limit talent coming into this country to help build back our businesses and create ingenuity, which is really what we're all about now. We're not building widgets here anymore, but it's ingenuity and bringing people in who have specialized knowledge. It just seems so counterintuitive. I don't get it.
Yeah, absolutely. I completely agree. It's most of these are in the STEM field, science, technology, engineering, and math.
Yep.
And, you know, they could massively contribute to our economy and have continued to do so. So it is a little bit disconnected there.
Are there grassroots campaigns of some kind that are formed to help get this, you know, for listeners and voters and people to get back to Congress and say, fix this?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So, you know, I partner up with the American Immigration Lawyers Association. This is a hot button issue with us. There's also not just the grassroots, there's also large companies, multinational companies that are filing to support, you know, these numbers increasing. Now, even for someone who has gone to school here with a bachelor's degree and just happens to not be a U.S. citizen or green card holder, but, you know, either are here with their family that also got this H-1B visa or here on a student visa by themselves, they're also put into this lottery if they have a bachelor's degree.
Oh, I see.
If they have a master's degree, there's actually an additional 20,000 visas that are available. So it's really 85,000, but those 20,000 are only available if you have a U.S. master's degree. And more than 20,000 people apply for that cap as well.
I see. Yeah. So back to the listener out there who's saying, okay, so if I want to grow my company with talent from overseas somewhere,
right,
I really need to be thinking about this way, way in advance, right?
Absolutely, yeah. We suggest talking and interviewing the candidates around October, November, December, and then contacting us around January, February so that we can put together an application in April.
And so how about going back out now? You're sending workers overseas and you need to have special visas and things like that. One of our conversations we had earlier was that it's a real quagmire of rules and regulations depending on where they go, what they're going to be doing, and different countries can be very, very different.
Right, right. Absolutely. So one thing that, you know, differentiates me from other immigration lawyers is I'm also licensed in the UK, and I have a global migration practice. So if a U.S. citizen wants to go abroad, either to the UK, Europe, Asia, I support them with that, either through my own license with the UK or with partnering with local counsel. And each one of those areas, each one of those countries, they have their own politics, they have their own requirements, they have their own political party and their own interests. So each one really requires a thorough analysis of the immigration laws and how we can get the individual there when they want to go.
Oh, makes sense. Now, do you have any client stories that you can share with us?
Absolutely, yeah. So, you know, speaking specifically with Exit Radio, we had a client who was a baby boomer who was selling his business. And, you know, it was a small to medium-sized business. And a lot of his employees were like family to him, you know? Mm-hmm. And so he wanted to make sure they were taken care of. Mm-hmm. So we ensured, thankfully he got us involved early on in the process during the M&A work and even hired our firm to handle the M&A work. So because we have a very open team culture, I was brought in to ensure that none of those people who were in the immigration process either lost their place in line to get a green card or lost their working ability. And each one required a little bit of a different strategy, either doing an additional filing or perhaps, you know, timing their requirements a little bit differently. So we were able to ensure that all of his employees, who, again, he considered like family, were properly transitioned into this new company.
Yeah, and that's a fantastic service because you think about it, we're trying to eliminate any hiccup that could prevent or derail a sale of a business. And, of course, employee issues are a big part of that. And
absolutely.
So international employee issues become part of that. Mm-hmm. So another thing to put on your list, listeners, another complication, but now you have professionals, you have people you can talk to about this. And can you offer our listeners any tips, ideas, precautions? What can you tell us?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, the earlier that you spot a potential issue, the earlier you should contact a talented immigration attorney. And the earlier that, the I-9 process, which is before you begin employment with a company, you have to show your valid employment authorizations. It is a very simple form, but a very complicated form. So either talking to an HR professional like many that you and I know, Bill, or myself would definitely serve the company. So that's the biggest ding that I've seen companies get. As the economy is kind of lessened, the compliance measures and the enforcement measures by the government has increased. So they're coming in, they're reviewing those I-9s, and various other immigration audits are occurring. So compliance is the biggest thing nowadays.
So just because they haven't looked at it in the past doesn't mean they're not looking now, and those forms need to be in order.
Yeah, absolutely. And the government always, they want people to self-audit. So if you show that, you're constantly reviewing either on a semi-annual or annual basis these forms, these compliance documents, then that they'll take that into account when they audit.
In your experience, what's the likelihood that you would find something out of line in an audit of, say, a 50 employee I-9s or something?
Yeah, for I-9s, it's huge because it's a very it's a very small but very complicated form because it basically memorializes and is an affidavit of a bunch of steps that the employer and employee had to take in a timely manner. So if they have like a talented HR professional, then rarely is there an issue. But if they do it themselves, and many times they just do it themselves because it is a form that ADP requires or their payroll service provides.
Yeah, you print it off, right?
You just fill it out the form and then you send it to ADP. But the form really just memorializes the steps that an employer and employee need to take.
I see.
So when we go in and they do it themselves, I would say there's more than a 50 to 60% non-compliance there.
So start early, and if you've done your own work, have someone check it out before the government steps in and says no, because you can get into a lot of trouble with
yes,
that, right?
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. It's about $500 to $5,000 per I-9 issue, depending on what the violation is.
Okay. How do our listeners get in touch with you and your firm?
My firm is in Cerritos. You can reach us at our landline, 562-229-1220, 562-229-1220. Mm-hmm. And again, we're the Chug firm. We're located in Cerritos, California, close to where the 91 and the 5 meet.
Okay. And the Chug in the Chug firm is spelled C-H-U-G-H, and that's the website is www.chug.com, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And so if someone had was saying, boy, this firm sounds pretty good. They go to the website. Are there a lot of resources there?
Yeah, absolutely. So. Yeah. We have a corporate newsletter, an immigration newsletter, and a tax newsletter that come out monthly.
Great. Well, this has been a wealth of information. I learned something I didn't know about, and I'm madder than ever. It's like that old, I'm mad as hell. No, I mean, it just seems so counterproductive to limit these things. And, you know, those of us out here in planner land, even if this is something we rarely hear about, but it's a big issue. And I'm glad you're here to help our listeners. And it sounds like if they do themselves a favor to talk to you about immigration and then see what else you have going on in your firm, it sounds like a very progressive firm. So
yeah,
thanks
absolutely.
For joining us.
Thank you very much. It was a great pleasure being here.
I've been talking with Ganesh Kalyanaraman, and we're going to take a short break and we'll be right back. So please stay tuned.
You're listening to ExitCoachRadio.com, the information station for age 50-plus business owners, where we're interviewing over 250 top advisors for their best tips, ideas, and precautions so you can be well-planned. We upload new one-minute tips every day. ExitCoachRadio.com. Come listen for a minute.
Thank you for listening to Exit Coach Radio.